pictured a man named Hirudi to be dark-skinned, wearing a thobe with a kafaya headdress. Not hardly. The man at the door could have been ripped off the pages of Southern GQ. He was in top athlete shape, with chestnut hair cut close, a 5 o'clock shadow on a sturdy jaw, and all that above jeans and a perfect white Oxford shirt, starched sleeves rolled almost to his elbows. He offered a hand. Fantasy and I looked at each other. She pointed at me. I stabbed a finger back at her. Hirudi said,
"Don't fight over me."
No accent whatsoever. I reached out. He held my hand with both of his.
"Do you have red hair?"
"Almost," I stammered.
"And children, daughters, perhaps?"
"How?"
"Ivory snow, gentle care,"
he said.
"Mothers of young sons use stronger detergents."
His thumb gently grazed my wedding band.
"And someone loves you very much."
He dropped my hands and reached for Fantasies. He laughed.
"You're a tall drink of water."
"And of French Creole descent, with an Ivy League education."
Fantasy and I looked at each other wide-eyed. How perceptive was this man? We exchanged overly polite introductions for the next minute, and just when I was wondering if he'd ever ask us in, Fantasy said, "We're ready to go over the surveillance video if you are, Your Excellency." He casually leaned against the doorframe, knowing exactly where it was.
"We don't need to watch the footage because you have Harley. Please return him,"
Al Abasov said.
"I need his help."
My breath caught in my throat, certain the next words out of his mouth would be, "And I can smell Mrs. Harrington's dead body on you two. Sit tight while I call the authorities." But he didn't. Instead, he called out over his shoulder,
"Rod, will you accompany these ladies?"
He didn't say it loud enough for Rod, whoever he was, to hear it, and he didn't give Rod, whoever he was, time to answer either.
"On second thought,"
he said,
"I'll accompany you."
Harry didn't trust us. Imagine that. 15. My skill level for lying through my teeth when the occasion called for it, like then, was expert. Any other time under those particular circumstances, I'd have lied my head off. But I proceeded cautiously with this Harvard man who knew the brand of laundry detergent I used to wash Bex and Quinn's clothes. I had a feeling it would do no good to lie. Had I been so inclined, the one on the tip of my tongue was that the Bellissimo was full of dogs. We'd been around dozens, and I had no idea who or where his dog was. Instead, I said, "Please don't bother. I'll bring Harley to you, Your Excellency."
"No need for the formality. Call me Hiri."
He hesitated just a beat, engaging an internal sonar before he took a step out the door.
"After you."
"Not necessary, Your Hiri," Fantasy said. "Wait here. Davis, stay with him. I'll get Harley. I'll be back in 2 shakes. I looked at my watch. 2 shakes to return Harley to his rightful owner, but only 3 shakes until one of us had to report for cage duty. It took 10 shakes to get there unless one of us had wings. And if I had wings right about then, I'd scoop up my daughters and fly to Nashville.
"Am I keeping you, Mrs. Cole?"
"Listen, Mr. Hiri, I didn't know if I should apologize to the man, then tell him the whole story of how we came across his big black dog, which I could never tell without exposing Bootsy for the killer witch she was. Then he'd think I was crazy, and instead of stealing $1 million from the Bellissimo or finding a fence who would front me $1 million for a Harry Winston dog collar I couldn't find, I'd be in a straitjacket, trying to explain it all to the good people at Gulf Oaks Psychiatric Hospital. Before I could decide what to say or how to say it, Harry's big black dog was between us, overjoyed to see everyone. In a smooth and practiced way, Harry said,
"Slow."
Harley quieted. Harry said,
"Sit."
Harley circled to Harry's left and sat. Harry said,
"Blow the ladies a kiss."
Harley raised a paw to his lips, then threw us a kiss. We were about to make our awkward exit when Harry looked over the rims of his Tom Ford sunglasses as if to look us in the eye, which he did. Back and forth his dark eyes sought and somehow found ours.
"I realize you need to go,"
he said.
"The adrenaline pouring from both of you is remarkable. You've checked your watches 5 times that I know of. Obviously, you have a pressing responsibility elsewhere."
He settled his Tom Fords back on the bridge of his nose.
"I'd like a little of your time after whatever it is you're late for. I want to know the circumstances under which you came in possession of Harley, and I want to know exactly what happened to Mrs. Harrington."
I did, too.
"One more thing. Your dog has canine atopic dermatitis, thus the odor. Take her to the veterinarian."
"Princess, dermatitis, no collar, and not our dog." Fantasy sniffed the lapel of her jacket. We took Cage together, after a smallish argument. "I'll do it," I said. "No, Davis, I will." "No, Fantasy, I will." "Oh, no, you won't. I'm taking Cage." Already late, we stood at the elevator doors, rocking, papering, and scissoring. Deadlocked 3 times in a row, we stepped into the elevator together. She didn't want me to steal the money, and I didn't want her to steal it. If we could find the collar, we wouldn't even need to, but then we'd be stealing a collar. We fished our phones out of our pockets as the elevator doors closed. I started with Vree. "Have you found the collar?" "No, but..." "Keep looking." I hung up on her and dialed Bradley, who said his eyes were better, but now he had a brick between them. "What?" I asked. "A brick between your eyes? What?" He said,
"It feels like there's a brick between my eyes, Davis."
Beside me, Fantasy whispered, "Allergies." I flipped the phone upside down and whispered back to her, "Bradley has never had an allergy in his life." She said, "He does now." To Bradley, I said, "Is there any chance it's allergies?" He said,
"I've never had an allergy in my life."
Then I called Pasta, an Italian restaurant on the mezzanine level, and ordered dinner, salad, spaghetti, and cheese bread.
"For how many, Mrs. Cole?"
I told her 10. You never know. Fantasy said,
"How can you order spaghetti when your house smells like Little Italy already?"
I told her because Bex and Quinn wouldn't stop asking for Princess's food. Bite, bite, bite. My last call was to July. I told her I was on Cage duty until 5 and asked her to take the girls home where there'd be spaghetti. She said she'd bathe and pajama the girls, have them ready for spaghetti, and see me after Cage. What would I do without July? Fantasy called her husband. She didn't even have the chance to say hello. He started in on her before she could. After half a minute, she held the phone away from her head. I could hear Reggie through the small speaker. She put the phone back to her ear and interrupted. "Listen up, Reggie. I've been working myself stupid with this dog show while you've been watching layups and eating loaded potato skins at TGI Fridays. I haven't even been home. I stayed with Davis last night because my shift ended at midnight and Bradley's out of town. No one stole your truck. I'm driving it because I had car trouble. I did not delete your SEC spring football games or throw away your toothpaste, and there's nothing going on in the bonus room that I know of. To me, she said. He hung up on me. Then, he's mad because the boys lost the game. I think he's projecting his anger on me. I said, you're probably right. Then she called No Hair. We're on our way to take Cage. Poor Fantasy was yelled at by two men in a row. No, we're not joined at the hip, No Hair. Stop calling us the Bopsy Twins, and I don't appreciate you suggesting neither of us can count high enough to take Cage alone. To me, she said, he hung up on me. Then, he's mad about the Smuckers. I think he's projecting his anger on me. I said, you're probably right. When the elevator doors parted on the casino level, heads ducked, we fought the lobby crowd, then the casino crowd, until we reached the main cashier cage, where we had to wait for retina scans before the next set of elevator doors parted to take us to the vault. On the way down, Fantasy said, Reggie asked about the bonus room. Asked what? If I'd taken an axe to the door.
You didn't, did you?
What happened to the door, Davis? Did you tear it up getting the dead woman out?
Not so much.
She's out, right, Davis?
She's out.
What did Dr. Delirious say? How'd she meet her maker?
He didn't. The doors opened to a security scan booth. She was gone. Fantasy turned white.
She was what?
Gone. No body. Fantasy slapped the sides of the scan booth and gasped for air, which brought the cage guards running. One put a hand on his holster. The other raised an eyebrow at two of us showing up for Cage, late and obviously, Fantasy at least, shaken. It was a standoff, both sides waiting it out, until the guards decided they didn't want to challenge Mrs. Cole. We stepped through the body scan and into the vault, then heard the clicks of vault imprisonment with relief. For the next 40 minutes, we wouldn't get any bad news. For the first few, we did nothing but pant.
Let's get the count over with, then we can talk.
Good idea, I said. We verified $17 million. We did not sign off on it. We had another 10 minutes in the vault. Plenty of time. We pulled metal stools from under the count table, then perched on them, the $17 million and wrapped stacks on the table between us. We talked over it.
Davis, where's the dead woman?
I don't know. We contemplated our bleak futures. We verified the $17 million without stealing one of them. I couldn't do it. I'd have to find another way, because I couldn't bring myself to take $1 million from the Bellissimo.
I miss Harley.
It was 6:30 Monday night. The sun was setting on the Gulf. Another search of my home hadn't produced Princess's Harry Winston collar. We left the vault without $1 million. We didn't know where Bootsy was because the iPad was dead as the AWOL caregiver. Plus, we hadn't done what we'd said we'd do, which was get back with His Excellency Heary for a tell-all. On top of all that, my husband had canceled his dinner plans with the general manager of our sister casino, Jolie, also at the SGF symposium, because now he had 3 bricks between his eyes. Fantasy, Vree, the girls, and I were having dinner on the veranda because Bex and Quinn were spaghetti slingers. Vree was crying in hers.
I miss Harley so much!
I poured her more red wine. Bex and Quinn, tangled in noodles, said, Dink, dink, dink. Vree took a big dink of the wine and said,
I mean, first I missed Meredith in bubble bath.
She pushed her salad away and pulled her wine closer.
And it's not like I don't miss them anymore. I do, even though they don't miss me a bit. It's like this was supposed to be our vacation together, but they're the ones who are having fun. I guess it won't be fun when Mayor has to go to the hospital, but for now, they're having fun. The hotel they're staying in has a doggy pool. Meredith sent a video of Bubs in her bikini swimming with 2 beagles from California, but she didn't know their names. They were sister and brother, so you know they had cute names. Can you even believe it? A doggy pool!
Bex and Quinn, covered in red sauce, said,
Dog! 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 Then Harley came.
Vree dabbed her eyes with a napkin.
He filled the hole in my heart. He was so sweet. He stared into my eyes like he knew me. And that was one thing about Harley that reminded me of Gooch. Like how Gooch was when we first started dating, because he stared into my eyes like that too. Like looking all the way into my soul. Harley did the same thing, and I have a feeling Harley would love me like that forever. While Gooch hasn't even called me one time. Can you believe it? Not one time. I was thinking that if we didn't give Harley back, he could come home with me. Like, I'd walk in the door with him and tell Gooch there was a new man in my life. One who would love me forever, even if I was the biggest disappointment in the whole wide world. And Harley wouldn't go fishing all the time, because for real, dogs don't fish. But I'm not saying I'd pretend like I had a dog husband. Wouldn't that be funny, a dog husband? That would be a good Hallmark movie. I love Hallmark movies. Especially at Christmas. Those are the very best. I mean, it would be more like Harley would be Bubblegum's husband. But, you know, they could never have puppies.
Vree went silent. Fantasy and I looked at each other.
I mean,
Vree snapped back.
Meredith and Bubs are having the time of their lives. Gooch won't answer the phone. Harley is gone, and I'm stuck with Princess.
From the Poppin' Play under the cherry tree, Princess, deep in a dish of manicotti, yapped. I turned my head for 1 second to look at her, and when I looked back, Bex and Quinn had donned spaghetti bowl hats.
Davis?
Fantasy said,
Your children need another bath.
Bex and Quinn said,
Bath, bath, bath.
Then what? Good question.
Then we face facts.
Fantasy checked the time.
Vree can't win the money at the slot tournament because she's not in it. We didn't steal the money from the Bellissimo vault because we thought we had the dog collar. We don't have the dog collar.
I said, we don't have Bootsy either. Bex and Quinn said,
boo, boo, boo.
Vree said,
what are we going to do with the collar when we find it?
Another good question. Fantasy stood and tugged the sleeves of her Bellissimo blue security jacket on her way to the evening round of the three-dog night slot tournament.
What are we going to do if we don't find the caller?
The million-dollar question. 16. Rain slapping the bedroom windows in sheets woke me before dawn Tuesday morning. I rearranged Bex and Quinn, who slept through everything, thinking about Bradley, wondering if he felt better or worse, and thinking about Atlanta. The dog showed Judge with the toothache who didn't show. Atlanta. Hiridi Al Abbasov. Atlanta. Princess. The Smuckers. The fake housekeepers. The dead caregiver. Atlanta. I wondered why Southern Gaming hadn't moved their headquarters to Atlanta. Home Depot, Coca-Cola, and UPS were based out of Atlanta, and if Bradley was so dead set on raising the girls away from a casino, well, Atlanta was away. There wasn't a casino in or near Atlanta. Atlanta gambled in Biloxi. I wondered if there might be a dot to connect all the Atlanta people. I couldn't see His Excellency running in the same circles with the Smuckers, so probably not. I reached for the phone, dialed, and whispered, "Are you awake?"
"I am now,"
Meredith said. "Are you waking me up to tell me you have the money?" "I'm working on it." I tucked a corkscrew curl behind Quinn's baby ear. "Did Green live through the night?"
"I don't know."
I heard the click of a bedside lamp.
"It's still night,"
she said. "I'm assuming he did because I haven't heard otherwise. How's Vree holding up?" "She lived through the night," I said. "I'm assuming she did because I haven't heard otherwise."
"Where is she?"
"In one of the guest rooms with the worst excuse for a dog I've ever seen in my life." "Speaking of dogs, what's Bubbles doing?"
"She's curled up in her velvet bed, dreaming dog dreams."
"It's 6 in the morning, Davis. Everyone's dreaming. What about Bootsy? Has she surfaced?" "Not here." "What about there?"
"No, Bootsy."
"She could be anywhere."
"Instead of looking for Bootsy, why don't you try looking for the fake housekeepers?"
Meredith said.
"If Bootsy has them, even if she turned them into lizards, you'd probably still be able to track their phones. Surely she didn't voodoo their phones."
"Meredith, you're brilliant." I told her I loved her. We promised to stay in touch. Then I gently eased out of bed, propping pillows in my place. I tiptoed to the coffee pot. I'd go to Candy Smucker's Bellissimo guest profile, find her phone number, hack her phone, then find the fake housekeeper's phone numbers. They'd surely reported to her after they misrepresented their way into my home. I'd get their numbers, track their phones, and maybe find Bootsy. On the off chance Bootsy didn't have them bound and gagged in the back seat or hiding under rocks in a lizard cage, I wouldn't mind finding them anyway. I had a few questions for those two. One was, whose idea was it for Candy Smucker's bodyguards to pretend to be housekeepers and waltz into my home? What was the point, and what was the purpose? Next, I'd ask how they intercepted an internal call to Bellissimo Housekeeping. Then, I'd ask them the question I really wanted an answer to. When they were at Fantasies, did they see or hear anything related to the caregiver's death? One thing at a time, Davis. One thing at a time. I poured a cup of coffee, sat down at my desk, fired up my computer, and found the Smucker's Bellissimo portfolio. Two clicks later, I had Cleavon Smucker's cell phone number, not his wife's. His was listed on the guest profile. Hers was nowhere to be found. Instead of taking the time to hack his phone to get her number, I logged on to Facebook because finding her number there, and I was sure I would be faster than hacking his cell phone provider's database. I pulled up her page and didn't find her phone number because I found his toe. Her last post from the casino, 12 minutes earlier, was a stomach-flipping close-up of her husband's bare and beleaguered foot propped on a blackjack table. Above it, her heartfelt plea. Cleve's ingrown toe busted wild open. I danced on it by accident. We need a doctor right now. We're waiting here 'cause he can't walk. I had to act fast before I passed out. I fished and cloned Biloxi Urgent Care's Facebook page, then posted a comment on Candy's page under the picture of Cleavon's nasty, 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 nasty toe. On the way. Candy, nose to phone, responded immediately. Thank you, he's hurtin'. Free drinks for you, and I pay good. I pushed my coffee aside. I was finished with food and drink for the rest of my life. I picked up the house phone, dialed the Bellissimo operator, and asked for Leverett Erlene's room. He answered on the 50th ring.
Who is this?
It's Davis. Get up, Erlene. You're needed in the casino.
By the Amazon goddess?
Fantasy would kill him if she knew he called her an Amazon goddess. No, Erlene, it's a medical emergency.
Let me put my pants on.
And there was an image to replace that of Cleavon Smucker's ingrowed toe. I had to put my head between my knees. When I came up for air, I covered my eyes, leaving myself a sliver of vision, just enough to get to the corner of Candy Smucker's post and hide it without seeing it again. Then I scrolled. I scrolled down and down and down, past the endless documentation of her life to her help wanted post of 2 weeks earlier. I clicked through the comments, thinking I'd stumble on her phone number. She'd surely posted it somewhere. And before long, I'd scrolled to the thread of correspondence between her and the fake housekeepers, sealing the deal. Then I saw, in the early light of a new day, what I hadn't seen in the frenzied haze of the afternoon before. The initial response to Candy's ad hadn't been from Brutus Sebastian. It was from someone who tagged Brutus Sebastian. Someone following Candy Smucker's social media misdeeds saw the Bellissimo opportunity and led Brutus Sebastian to it by typing his name in the comments, tagging him, thus alerting him. The fake housekeepers would have never known about the Smucker job had someone not led them straight to it. Who was that opportunistic someone? That opportunistic someone wasn't a someone at all. It was an organization, the Atlanta Council for the Blind. The Council for the Blind led the fake housekeepers to the Smuckers, the Bellissimo, My Home, and, ultimately, Fantasy's home, too. This was a big Atlanta con. The question was, who was conning whom? There wasn't a shred of useful information about the Atlanta Council for the Blind on the World Wide Web. Nothing. I found a single web page with directions to their facilities, lean office hours, and links to additional resources. I didn't find a phone number, email address, board of directors, list of donors, officers' names, or a membership roster, any of which could have helped. To tie the Atlanta Council for the Blind to the fake housekeepers,
I'd have to go next door to Leno's and do it myself. I seriously doubted it was His Excellency. How could Hiridi Al Abbasov be on Candy Smucker's Facebook page when he wasn't on Facebook? Someone with his Hiri was the link to the fake housekeepers. I texted Fantasy. We might need your tranquilizer gun again. She texted back. What's this we business? Vree appeared in the doorway, yawning, stretching, and wearing baby blue shorty pajamas with matching fuzzy slippers.
Davis?
She yawned again.
I can't find Princess. She got out of the playpen. Have you seen her?
If someone had told me that one day I'd try to talk my sick husband into staying at a strange hotel 500 miles away, instead of coming home to his wife, his daughters, and his own bed, I'd have said they were crazy. That day came, and I was the crazy one, when Bradley called at 11 Tuesday morning to say he was seriously considering calling it a Nashville day, boarding the Bellissimo jet waiting for him at the airport, and seeing me in an hour.
I want a bowl of chicken soup from Chops.
They don't have chicken soup in Nashville?
What are you saying, Davis? Don't come home?
He sounded awful, and that was exactly what I was saying. He couldn't come home. I'd rather him be sick in Nashville than divorced in Biloxi. Of course not, I said. I'll get in the car and come get you myself. When what I really meant was what he said. Don't come home. Not yet, anyway.
You don't have a car.
I'll drive yours.
Please, don't.
I let it slide, but only because he was sick. Do you have a fever?
I don't think so,
he said. Does your hair hurt?
No.
Then you don't have a fever.
Again, Davis, it sounds like you're trying to talk me out of feeling bad.
I was. I'm not trying to talk you out of it so much as I hate to see you cut your trip short when, if you give it a minute, you might feel better. We were on the terrace again. Me, Bex and Quinn, Fantasy, Vree, Leverett Erlene, M.D., yes, Erlene the idiot, and Princess, who was back in the pop and play, but this time we had the playpen upside down and over her. She could still see out the mesh walls, but she couldn't tunnel out, like she had earlier that morning, then nestled her garlic Dorito self between my two babies and my bed, which was where we found her, in the bed I sleep in the bed my sick husband wanted to come home and crawl into. Erlene the idiot was there because I called him. For the second time in a single day, he'd hospitalized Cleavon Smucker, much to the delight of each and every one of the Bellissimo's 4,000 employees, diagnosing him with a bacterial infection approaching mutilated abscess that would hit his heart chambers any second and kill him dead. Candy posted a selfie on Facebook taken from the interior of the ambulance, accompanied with this explanation. Cleve's toe is fixin' to kill him. We need blessings and prayers. I had to call Erlene again because Fantasy refused to touch her pink tranquilizer gun. She said I didn't need her pink tranquilizer gun to go next door and connect the housekeepers to the Council for the Blind. And if I did, I was on my own, because Hiridi Al Abbasov would smell her on it, and she didn't want to go to prison. I knew less about knockout drugs than Fantasy did, so once again, Erlene was my only option. Fantasy waved to get my attention and mouthed, "Bradley can't come home until we steal the money." I mouthed back, "I know that."
"Let me talk to him."
Erlene's hand was in my face. I smacked it away.
"Who was that?"
Bradley asked. "Nothing, no one," I said. "I didn't hear anything. Do your ears hurt, too?"
My ears, my eyes, my throat, my head. If it's above my neck, it hurts.
I mimed writing. Fantasy dug in her purse and tossed me a small spiral notepad and a pen. I scribbled, ears, eyes, throat, head. I shoved the note under Erlene's nose. He read it, then sat back, tapping his chin.
Could be brain cancer.
Hold on, Bradley. I kicked Erlene under the table. What else? Do you have any other symptoms?
I can't taste anything, Bradley said.
I scribbled it down. Can't taste. Erlene's bushy eyebrows closed in on themselves. He leaned too close to Fantasy and whispered in her ear. The look on her face would have been no different had a boa constrictor had its lips to her head. She shoved Erlene away and started scribbling again, then passed me another note. This moron says if he can't taste, it's a brain tumor, not brain cancer. Is there even a difference in a brain tumor and brain cancer? I wrote back, "You're not helping." What have you tried to taste? I had to keep Bradley on the phone long enough to talk him out of coming home.
What have I tried to taste? Davis, was that a real question?
It was.
It wasn't.
What I meant...
I know what you meant. I tried to taste hot Jack Daniels with lemon.
Fantasy and Erlene were in the middle of an aggressive, low-volume exchange. She was the aggressive part, slapping Erlene twice. She shoved another note in front of me. This fool has decided it's a brain aneurysm and insists, I tell you, Bradley should get his affairs in order. I wrote back, tell him one more word out of him and he gets a bullet in his brain. I let her read it, then wadded it and let it sail. It landed close to the poppin' play. Princess yapped at it. Bex and Quinn said,
woof, woof, woof.
Was that a dog?
Bradley asked. That was Bex and Quinn, you're hearing things, I said. How hard did you try to taste the Jack Daniels? He didn't answer right away. Bradley, you have a hangover.
You think?
How many drinks did you have?
I don't remember.
Call the front desk, have them bring you ice water, Gatorade, and Advil, sleep a few hours, and if you don't feel better, come home.
You'll get me soup?
I'll get you soup. I'd barely ended the call when my name was bellowed from the terrace door. Or, rather, not exactly my name was bellowed from the terrace door.
David!
Erlene the idiot's chair shot back and rocked on two legs while he clutched his heart and ogled Bianca.
Davis, do you have a defibrillator?
Fantasy shot out of her chair, offering it.
Bianca, please join us. Meet Dr. Erlene.
Doctor?
Bianca tossed her hair over her shoulder. She stood in the open door and gave a 10-minute dissertation about my lack of consideration for her reputation and valuable time. I'd missed a dog show judge's meeting. Her first attempt to chew me out was a call to my cloned cell phone sitting alone on the desk in my dark office. Then she tried the house phone, which was in the house, while I was on the terrace. I'd forgotten about the dog show entirely, including the meeting. When she finished, Erlene the idiot tisk-tisked me, shaking his head.
David, how could you? It's deplorable. You're deplorable. It's wretched. You're wretched. It's despicable.
I get it, Erlene. In the middle of all that, Fantasy took a call from No Hair, who asked her if she wouldn't mind making an appearance at the hot dog slot tournament well underway. Bianca looked at Vree, who she'd never met.
You, buxom girl, I need a tall glass, and by glass, I mean barware, of sparkling water on 3 cubes of ice with 1 squeeze of lime. 1.
Then she turned to Erlene. Bianca loved doctors. All doctors. Any doctor. She asked if she might have a moment of his time.
I'll oblige you anything.
He stood as she sat.
Everything.
Her head wobbled.
What is that foul odor?
Princess woofed. Bex and Quinn said, Banka, banka, banka. Bianca, dropping all pretenses and all posturing, turned to my daughters and said,
Hello, darling girls.
There was that side of her. Then she held an upturned hand above Erlene's seersuckered lap.
Do you see this?
He cradled her hand in both of his and put his nose in it.
Yes, my dear, I do.
The anomaly?
A slight discoloration. Horrors!
Erlene licked his lips.
What should I do?
Well, lovely lady.
I grabbed Bex. Fantasy grabbed Quinn. Vree grabbed Princess. And we ran. 17. I nervously tapped an ink pen against the gold linen covering the judge's table, waiting for the talent competition to start at noon. The other judges weren't too impressed with me to begin with. I think it was the horse clothes, and they were outright irritated at me for missing the meeting. They already didn't appreciate that I knew nothing about dogs, clearly didn't want to be there, and since the first round of competition, after Bianca stopped badgering me about scores, had given every dog the highest score, 5. As soon as the score screen was ready to accept it. What little love my fellow judges might have had for me left completely when the competition finally began, and I spent it head down, phone in lap, returning messages from the first talented dog until the last. I didn't plan it that way. The first act was a French bulldog wearing sunglasses, flipping around on a mini skateboard, and he hadn't flipped twice before a message hit my phone from the preacher's wife, Gina Gully. I couldn't help but look. It said, Do you have a soul? I shot back. Of course I do. Do you have the joy, 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 joy down in your heart? What do you want, Gina?
He who giveth and taketh life has bestowed his almighty power on you. You are on the throne.
I was on a banquet chair.
Thou must accept the job our Lord God and Savior has given you, Davis.
And what is that, Gina? To steal money for him?
To save a life.
I let that one sit there.
Otherwise, it's eternal damnation for you.
I gave a white dog the size of a black bear 5 points for her yoga poses. Let me get this straight, Gina. You're telling me God wants me to spend the rest of this life in prison so I can avoid hell in the next?
To die is to gain, Davis.
What's that supposed to mean? Steal the money, then jump off a bridge?
You were always a willful, insolent, disrespectful child.
And she'd always been off her rocker. I delicately clapped for a Tibetan spaniel who finished a double jump rope routine. I had to relinquish my phone to clap. It buzzed on the judge's table, and I got dirty looks from both sides.
I dropped it in my lap to see what additional heavenly wisdom Gina had to impart, only to see it was a text from Baylor.
Davis, I'm in the emergency room of Biloxi Regional.
The Smuckers. Rather than wait to hear the news, Baylor had to report, because he poked text messages slowly with his right index finger. I clicked the Facebook icon on my home screen to get it straight from the horse's mouth. I found the worst selfie of Candy Smucker yet. She'd been awake and in the casino for 48 hours that I knew of, could have been 72, and it showed. Behind her, Cleavon, in a hospital gown, was on a gurney, grinning from ear to ear and giving his wife, his pain pills, or his life in general, two thumbs up. The caption, "Who wants to come to my casino? Me and Cleves going to get a lawyer and sue the stew out of the Bullshitzio casino." Their doctor tried to saw Cleves' toe off his leg. Come to Smucker's casinos for free drinks. I had bad news for them. Erlene was not the Bullshitzio's doctor. And why Baylor was bothering me with it was anyone's guess. He wasn't.
A woman drove herself here in a hot-wired Bellissimo truck. She told the admitting nurse she'd been knocked over the head, then bound, gagged, and thrown in the bed of the truck. The truck has been parked behind a boarded-up Long John Silver's on Bayview for 3 days. They're keeping her. She's dehydrated and has exposure exhaustion, which I've never heard of. The truck was signed out to you. Come take care of this woman.
Who is it? What's her name?
She's talking gibberish. I couldn't tell you.
What does she look like?
A witch.
The rude judge beside me deliberately and dramatically cleared his throat in my direction. I looked up from the devastation in my lap to see the small screen in front of me waiting on my score. I pushed 5, having not even looked up once to see who or what I was scoring, then went straight back to my phone. I texted Gina Gully. I'll wire the money. I'll get it there in time. She texted back, God's blessings on you and yours. It was my fault. Everything was all my fault. I had to make it right. Vree and I took the long way through the parking lot and lobby of Biloxi Regional Hospital. Neither of us complained about the painfully slow elevator. Our walk past the nurse's station to Bootsy's hospital room matched the pace of condemned prisoners being led to the gas chamber. The door to room 316 was cracked.
Maybe she's sleeping,
Vree said. We shouldn't bother her, I said.
Vreeland, is that you?
Vree's neck turned beet red. The color crept up her face. She fanned herself with her hands. I took a deep breath and pushed through the door, dragging Vree with me. Bootsy's bony arms flailed in our direction.
Vreeland!
2 fat witch tears rolled down her hollowed cheeks. Then she fell asleep. A nurse stopped by 15 minutes later.
Oh, good, she whispered over Bootsy. She said she wasn't closing her eyes until her daughter-in-law got here. I'm glad you're here. She needs rest. Which one of you is the daughter-in-law?
Vree raised her hand. We were on the other side of the bed, sitting side by side on a small plastic sofa under a window with a glorious view of the hospital's heat and air system.
Boy, she's a snorer, the nurse said.
How long do you think she'll have to stay in the hospital? I asked.
That's up to the doctor.
She flipped through Bootsy's chart.
It says here she works for Jesus Water.
She looked up from the chart.
Jesus Water?
You don't want to know, I said.
Well, she doesn't have insurance,
the nurse said. The doctor will probably let her go as fast as he can.
Probably one more round of fluids, then he'll release her when he makes rounds this evening. Her vitals are good.
She's a tough old bird, but she'll need round-the-clock supervision for the next little bit.
Has she said anything? I asked.
What do you mean? Like what?
Like what happened to her?
She was hit upside the head, then tied up in the back of a truck for 3 days is what happened, the nurse said. Any idea who did this to her?
I knew exactly who did it and wasn't about to explain it to the nurse. That's why I asked if she said anything.
She was waiting on her daughter-in-law.
I'm not really her daughter-in-law, Bree said. You see?
I zoned out. 15 minutes later, when the nurse knew all she never wanted to know about Gooch Howard and had backed up inch by inch all the way to the door, I interrupted Vree. Did she have anything with her when she got here?
If she did, it would be in the closet.
The nurse made a run for it. I pushed off the low sofa, walked to the closet, and opened the door. A large, clear bag greeted me. In black marker, someone had written Jane Doe across a white panel. I carried it back and dumped it out beside Vree. She scooted out of the way. A witch boot and Bootsy's bloomers fell to the floor. I shook out her witch dress. I stuck my hand in the deep pocket on the right. Nothing. I stuck my hand in the deep pocket on the left and pulled out a green-eyed skull nose ring. It hadn't been given up willingly. Safe from the elements in the deep folds of Bootsy's canvas witch dress, there was plenty of DNA left. Vree passed out. Bex and Quinn watched me dress. They said,
"Shiny, shiny, shiny."
I stopped, put down my can of Bee Blonde, and kissed 4 chubby cheeks and 2 pink noses.
"Thank you. You're shiny, too, and I love you."
They said,
"Mama, mama, mama."
I wondered how their daddy, daddy, daddy was. Their daddy who needed to be home, home, home in his own bed, bed, bed. The last time we talked was at 5 as I was racing home from Biloxi Regional. He said he was catching a cat nap before Gaming Commission cocktails, of which he planned on having few to none. I told him I loved him, and told him if he wasn't any better in the morning, he'd have to come home. There went my happy marriage. Then I made cocktail plans of my own. I called Cork, the wine bar in the casino. "What's the most expensive bottle of wine you have on hand?"
"That would be Screaming Eagle Cabernet, Mrs. Cole."
"How much?"
"$3,000 a bottle."
"That'll work," I said. "Send one up." Then I called Fantasy. "What are you doing?"
"I'm hiding from No Hair and Baylor until 8 o'clock.
"What's at 8?
"The next round of the Dogs Gone Wild slot tournament."
"Want to hide at my place for an hour?"
"Sure," she said. "What's up?"
"I need you to stay with Bex and Quinn. They've been with July since noon, and I don't want to ask her. I've played the dog show card as many times as I can."
"What about Vree?"
"For one, she stayed at the hospital with Bootsy. For another, I don't know if you've noticed, but Vree doesn't do babies."
"You're the one who hasn't noticed, Davis. Vree gives it all to dogs because she doesn't have babies to give it to."
The thought had never passed through my brain.
"What about the witch?"
Fantasy asked.
"How's she doing?"
"They're releasing her later."
"Why?"
"She has no insurance," I said.
"Who's going to take care of her?"
Fantasy asked. I didn't answer. I didn't want to say Erlene's name out loud one more time.
"Oh, hell,"
Fantasy said. "Can you stay with Bex and Quinn while I go next door for an hour or not?"
"Sure," she said.
but I don't understand why you're going next door. We need to find the housekeepers, Davis. If for no other reason, I want my car back. But I doubt they're next door.
We went over this earlier fantasy. The housekeepers found the smucker job through the Atlanta Council for the Blind. There isn't a doubt in my mind someone next door represents his Heary on that council. We need to know who.
Can't you look it up?
I tried, I said. I got nothing.
And your plan is what, Davis? Knock on the door and ask his Heary? He already knows you had his dog and probably suspects you know where the caregiver is. You need to find another way to connect the fake housekeepers to the blind center in Atlanta other than knocking on the sheik's door.
This is the fastest way, Fantasy. And besides, I'm going in undercover.
Which is ridiculous,
she said.
It doesn't matter how undercover you go in. He'll smell you.
No, he won't. Can you stay with the girls or not?
I can, but if Earlene shows up, I can't promise I won't kill him.
Have at it, I said. Then I called my neighbor, Hiridi Al Abbasov, who said he'd be delighted to clink a glass with Mrs. Sanders. I told him I'd come to him and I'd bring the wine. At 5 till 6, dressed and ready, I backed 10 feet away from the girls and all but bathed myself in Guerlain Le Bouquet de la Marie, Bianca's signature fragrance. At $1,000 an ounce, I must have squirted $900 on. I dared His Excellency to smell me through it. I checked Fantasy's pink tranquilizer gun. It was locked, loaded, and tucked in my Chanel clutch. I told my babies to be good for Aunt Fantasy, and I'd be right back. I picked them up. They coughed.
Banka, banka, banka.
I might have gone a little overboard with the perfume. The problem wasn't His Excellency recognizing me. The problem was Harley. I didn't fool the dog for a minute, and it took me 10 minutes to figure out how to get His Excellency on the balcony. I wanted to speak to him outdoors because, for one, we were choking on my perfume, and for another, I wanted to talk to him privately. He answered the door himself, and I hadn't seen anyone else, but that didn't mean someone else wasn't there. It was a big suite. I stood as far away from my host as I could, in a living room as large as my own, eyeing the balcony. The last strains of sun setting over the gulf meant nothing to him. The budding neon of Casino Row on Beach Boulevard at dusk, not a draw. The crescent moon that would soon appear didn't do a thing for Hiridi Al Abbasov. I was at a loss as to how to get him outside when he, reading my mind, said,
"How about the balcony?"
Too much perfume. As it turned out, I could have saved $900. His Heary, in a golf shirt, slacks, and the Tom Ford sunglasses, expertly opened the wine at the bar while I cased the place. Without moving his head, he said,
"Who are you looking for, Mrs. Cole? And who are you hiding from?"
Hiridi Al Abbasov saw through everything. He poured, not missing a drop. We followed Harley through the balcony doors. We settled, me downwind, his question and my perfume between us.
"I'm waiting."
Not so patiently. His crossed leg was going a mile a minute.
"What do you want? Why are you here?"
Might as well get it out there. "I have children."
"Yes,"
he said.
"The daughters."
"I believe someone with you sent 2 dangerous men to my home, endangering my children. I, in turn, sent them to my friend's home, where your dog's caregiver died.
If the men weren't directly responsible for her death, they are certainly responsible for her missing body. Last straw, Your Excellency. They almost killed a woman I've known my whole life. It started here, in your suite. I want to know who in your party is responsible. His Excellency adjusted his tone.